I'm Steve Garrett, and you're within the realm. Today we're going to learn a little bit about Isaac Parker in the days before he was a hanging judge, and then we're going to go in search of Kansas City's most iconic street corner. Growing up in what had been the Indian Territory, we grew up in the shadow of outlaws and lawmen. The lawmen came from the Fort Smith court of Judge Parker, better known as Hangin' Judge Parker. Well known as a character in Western movies, history buffs would tell you that Judge Parker sentenced 160 men to death, 79 of which were executed. Isaac Parker is best known for his 21-year tenure as the presiding judge of the Western District of Arkansas. Before he was a hanging judge, he was simply Isaac Charles Parker, born in October of 1838 near Barnesville, Ohio. His mother was part of the Shannon family, a political family well known in that state. He was educated in Ohio and taught school himself in order to pay for his higher education. He passed the Ohio bar in 1859. Within the year, he had moved west to St. Joseph, Missouri, to take up the practice of law with his uncle, his mother's brother, in the firm of Shannon and Brown. At the time, St. Joe was as far west as you could get by railroad in Missouri. It was also home to the Pony Express. This mail delivery system, which connected California to the eastern United States by horse and rider, was in full swing in the early days of young Isaac Parker's stay in St. Joe. By December of 1861, he had met and married Mary O'Toole. He would later have two sons with Mary, Charles and James. The following year, he opened his own law practice in St. Joseph and was elected as a Democrat to the position of city attorney for St. Joseph. He held that position for 3 one-year terms. Just a few days after he took office, the Civil War erupted. He joined the 61st Missouri Emergency Regiment, a Union outfit, and by the end of the war had risen to the rank of corporal. This unit was enrolled for service around St. Joe. The enrolled unit allowed regular forces to search out guerrillas and invading forces to the south. St. Joe had been a Democrat stronghold for the years before the Civil War, and there was considerable Confederate sympathies in the area throughout the war as well. By the end of that conflict, Isaac Parker had broken with the Democrats and served as a presidential elector for Abraham Lincoln in the 1864 presidential election. He was also a Republican candidate for county prosecutor in 1864. He was unsuccessful in that campaign. After the close of the war, he returned to his law practice. In 1868, he was approached by the Republicans to run for judge of the 12th Missouri Circuit Court, which he did, and he was elected. In 1870, he was nominated as a candidate for Congress by the Republicans. He resigned his judgeship and he committed his efforts to that campaign. His opponent withdrew 2 weeks before the election, and he handily won the office. He was re-elected 2 years later as well. The legislation that Parker sponsored in his first term suggests that he was somewhat of a progressive. One such piece of legislation was a bill that would have allowed women the right to vote and hold office in U.S. territories. He also sponsored legislation to organize Indian Territory into a state, 37 years before Oklahoma became a state. In his second term, he continued to focus on Indian policy, working towards fair treatment of tribes, especially those in the Indian Territory, the area where later he would preside as judge. He worked very hard towards fair treatment for Indians, so much so that other members of Congress suggested that Isaac Parker was the best friend that the Indian had in Congress. In 1874, he was again approached by the Republicans to try his hand at being the U.S. Senator. At this time, U.S. Senators were selected by the state legislatures, not by popular vote. But the tides were turning in Missouri and Parker knew that he would not get the appointment, so he sought a federal appointment. He was originally offered the position of Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the Utah Territory. He appealed to President U.S. Grant for a more suitable position. The judge at Fort Smith was being removed due to corruption, and at the time was being impeached. That judge, Judge Story, soon resigned, and Parker was appointed to that position. And the rest is history. Books, novels, movies, and history itself suggest that Judge Isaac Parker was a stern man. And I suppose that 79 executions might indeed suggest you are a stern man. But a newspaper interview, given just a month or two before his death, in September of 1896, suggests otherwise, and suggests that he was somewhat of a progressive for his time. In that interview, he said, "I never hanged a man. It was the law." He also expressed doubts in capital punishment in the interview, saying he favored the abolition of capital punishment. Sometimes characters in history show up and become two-dimensional caricatures of who they really are, the things that formed them, and their place in history, and the times in which they lived, are not judged by the standards of their own time, but by our own modern standards. Judge Isaac Parker, the hanging judge, is such a character. He began his public life when Overland Trails connected California and Oregon to the rest of the United States, and Bleeding Kansas loomed large in the national perspective. While he is often presented as a somber old judge, he was 36 at the time he took the bench in Fort Smith, and was the youngest judge on the frontier. Upon his death, Henry Ford had built his quadricycle and had determined that he was going to put America on wheels, and motion pictures were becoming all the rage, and the election of 1896 changed American politics. He played an important role in his section of the frontier. He helped change that frontier into something a little less wild. 11 years after his death, Indian Territory was incorporated into the state of Oklahoma, a cause he had championed way back in 1871 in his first session in Congress. He was much more than just a hanging judge, and he should be remembered as such. What's Kansas City's most famous intersection? It's 12th Street and Vine, as made famous in Lieber and Stoller's iconic hit, Kansas City. When the song was written in 1952, 12th Street and Vine was a hopping place. Many of Kansas City's best theaters and jazz clubs stood on this corner or not far from it. In the 30s, the area played host to luminaries such as Count Basie, Big Joe Turner, and Charlie Parker. The area was well known enough in 1952 that Lieber and Stoller, both 19-year-old Californians, knew it well enough to include it in the song. The song was recorded later that year by Little Willie Littlefield under the title Casey Lovin'. The song was recorded several times after that, but did not hit number one until 1959, when it was recorded by Wilbert Harrison. Since that time, over 300 other artists have recorded the song, including James Brown and the Beatles. It's been included in the list of the 500 songs that have shaped rock and roll, according to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Not too many years after Wilbert Harrison hit the tops of the charts with Kansas City, did the neighborhood of 12th Street and Vine fall on hard times. The bustling clubs closed, and the musicians moved to greener pastures. Even as bands from England and California were singing about standing on that particular corner, the neighborhood continued to deteriorate. And by the late 1960s, City Hall had determined it was time for urban renewal at 12th Street and Vine. City lots and dilapidated buildings were purchased or condemned by the city, and then demolished. 12th Street itself was closed, and after urban renewal, there was no longer a corner at 12th Street and Vine. Kansas City's most noted intersection was replaced by a 5-acre park, eventually named Going to Kansas City Plaza at 12th Street and Vine. There's not much there that would demonstrate the importance of the area to American music, both jazz and rock and roll. This is where Count Basie formed his first orchestra, and this is where Charlie Parker earned the nickname Yardbird. It was renowned enough that two teenage songwriters half a continent away would specifically name that street corner in a song that they were writing about the city. There are some ornamental streetlights and a signpost signifying that it once was the corner of 12th Street and Vine for the befuddled tourist wanting to take a picture there. But all is not lost. Even though the clubs are gone from the corner of 12th Street and Vine, a new jazz district has formed just down the road at 18th and Vine, centered around the American Jazz Museum. The district also boasts the restored Gym Theater. The gym was originally built in 1912 and served as a movie theater until the 1960s. It survived urban renewal, and efforts began in the 80s to save the building. It now plays host to concerts and events throughout the year. The Jazz District is always a great place for live music. The corner of 12th Street and Vine no longer exists, but there's a hit song that reminds us of how important the area once was to American music. I wonder how many other places just so important have been forgotten because they don't have a hit song. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Within the Realm. If you want to check out more information about the stories we covered, be sure to check out our website at withinpodcast.com and our Facebook page at Within the Realm. Be sure to like, recommend, and share. Be sure to check out Within the Realm on SoundCloud. Our theme music and acoustic transitional music is provided by 556 and a half. The jazz selection was provided by Public Domain. If you'd like to contact the show, you can do so by sending us an email at contact@withinpodcast.com. And, as always, thanks for listening.